This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This August, Limud Johannesburg brings you a cultural feast like no other. Explore the bold legacy of Jewish fashion icons with Lee Nudelman Sussman. Marvel at the transformative power of monumental art with Daniel Popper, and groove to Black music and synagogues with Anthony Tzvi Russell. From fashion to music, history to identity, Limud is where it all comes alive. Join us 15 to 17 August. Book now at limud.org.za. Rooms for the weekend are almost sold out. Limud, learn, engage, be inspired. This is the Deep Dive, and I am your host, as always, Brooke Spector. And we have a two-guest program. One of our guests, of course, was Richard Koch, and you've heard from him already. We had a lovely conversation about what he's going to do and about what he has done and where he is now. But my second guest is Sylvain Strike, who is multi-talented. That's not exactly fair. She's omni-talented, I guess. Looking at her bio, I realized that she was even in the film District 9, and I had forgotten that. But she has directed all manner of and created all manner of theatrical productions. She did a Molière play, The Miser, which we saw some years ago, and then she did her own creation with the theater company Fortune Cookie Theater that she's the co-founder of, Black and Blue, which is just the most delightful piece of theater, almost wordless. And someday I hope you'll do it again, because I think a new generation of audiences should really see it. It's warm and it's touching and it makes you feel better. And it's got nothing to do with bruises, except maybe it does. And I'll leave it at that. Sylvain went to the University of Cape Town, but she also went to the Jacques Lecoq School in France, where she studied mime and physical theater and presumably had a lovely time. And I think it's important to realize that all of her theatrical work brings together, yes, the obvious stuff, but the physicality of mime and motion. When we watched The Miser, I had this strange vision of watching The Miser as done by the Marx Brothers, with people rushing in and out and the controlled chaos on stage. And I am really looking forward to seeing her production of the Barber of Seville. The Barbette, I can't even pronounce the Italian properly. We'll just leave it there. The Barbers, it's now on, just started. On the opening night was on Wednesday at the Theater on the Bay in Cape Town, and I hope to get down there shortly and see it later on next week. Sylvain, thank you for joining, and thank you for giving us some time. I'm sure you were up late last night giving director's notes to people well into the early hours of the morning, so I'm really pleased you can join us.
Thank you so much for having me here, Brooks. It's a really, really lovely opportunity to speak to you and your followers and listeners about this new venture that I have embarked on, and we had two opening nights, one on Tuesday and one last night, because we have two casts. So with my first opera, I was actually tasked with a two-cast situation, which has been amazing because, well, opera singers can't sing straight up for six nights solid. So alternating two casts was part of the task at hand. So, yeah, we've opened twice. Felt a bit like Groundhog's Day, but it went well.
Now, why Rossini's The Barber of Seville? I mean, it's, yes, lots of people know The Marriage of Figaro, and I think fewer people understand that The Barber of Seville although it was composed years later by a different composer, actually takes place in the earlier life of the main character in that is in both plays, Figaro.
That's right. Well,
And
firstly, I mean, I was commissioned by the opera, the Cape Town Opera, if I and they asked if I would be interested. It's been a while that we've wanted to collaborate, and this felt like the right project. Rossini based the story of the Barber of Seville on Beaumarchais' farce, and I suppose was very much inspired by the comedic aspect of Beaumarchais' work, which at the time in the 18th century was a very fashionable thing. And Rossini's renowned for having really brought to a fore the sense of comic opera as opposed to the more common tragic opera, so to speak. And I guess I was approached by Madeleine Menard and the Cape Town Opera because of my ability to work with comedy, as you saw in The Miser and certainly many of the plays I've done, Tartuffe, etc. There have been those elements of comedic work in period pieces, especially. So this seemed to be a good fit. And it's a delightful story, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about mistaken identities or willful duplicities of identity, and in the end, the boy and girl get together. Of course, if you know the marriage of Figaro, you know that things don't go totally perfectly in that marriage, but that comes
Correct.
later, although it's earlier.
Yes.
Now, as I understand it, subject to your correction, you put Rossini on stage, presumably composing this or shaking his head or thinking it through or smiling and laughing at his own work. Is he a ghost? Is he a character? What are you trying to do with this?
Well, you know, it's a bonsai opera for people who haven't sort of come to know how we're presenting it. We're doing it at the Theatre on the Bay, which is a small space, a very intimate space, which for me reminded me of the small operatic stages of Italy, those very intimate spaces in which opera was performed. It wasn't always performed on a very large scale production size, so I thought, okay, we're not doing it with a full orchestra. That was a given from the start. It's accompanied by a single grand piano. And the pianist, Jan Huhu, who's a wonderful pianist and who's also the Cape Town Opera vocal coach to all of the stars that you'll see up there, was playing. And originally, we were going to have him either off stage or on a platform visible, but pretending that. You know, he's magically there and playing for these singers. But I thought, but we can't imagine that he's not part of this. I mean, it's impossible for us to ignore that there's a pianist playing with these people. So I was going to try, and it really worked the more we tried it for Rossini to be present. In fact, he's the very first person we see. He comes through the auditorium and hangs up his coat and his hat and starts to warm up with his overture and imagines the opera before his very eyes. So as
So
he's
we're
composing, the opera comes alive.
Actually seeing the opera through Rossini's imagination and through his eyes as the characters become real.
Exactly. And Jan happens to look very much like a very young Rossini because he is dark-haired. We've grown him some lamb chops. He looks spectacular in a very beautiful 18th-century outfit. And he is just so involved with the music and involved with all the singers because he knows them each so very well that he interacts with them. And what we found gradually in rehearsals, in arias that are particularly difficult, or the quintet, which is relentless. The artists are actually communicating with him as to say, dude, this is a lot, but hell, we're going to carry on, you know. So they are really taking their breaths when they need to. And Rossini seems to be part of twisting the plot wherever they think something's going right. Rossini throws in a curveball, and they then take Rossini in at that point. Of course, Jan is personally lit, so he is part of the set and the action. We can never forget that he's there, which is really beautiful.
One of the things that I've observed about the work that I have seen that you have been involved with, including a very early piece, Baobabs. I can't remember the full title,
Yes.
but that was long ago.
Baobabs don't grow here.
There you go. And at one point, in fact, you were an instructor to my daughter years ago.
That's right. I remember.
And what I notice about all of your work is that it's yes, there's a physicality to it, and you're marrying the modern with the much more traditional through the physical theater aspect of your direction. This carries through to this work too, I imagine. Am I right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I think the challenge here is, it's a kind of standard norm that people tend to accept that opera singers are really all about the technique and the vocal prowess and the virtuosity of what they've been able to train their voices to do, which is jaw-droppingly incredible whenever I witness it. I mean, every day in the rehearsal room, I've just been, how on earth? But it is a known fact that very often, from the voice down, from the voice box down, very little moves. And for some reason, that this has become a norm, that their bodies are still and the song is delivered. And I really wanted to push the boundaries, and I think that's partly why, I was offered this particular task of the Barbara of Seville. I was wondering if it was possible to just see what the limitations are for opera artists and embodiment. And of course, we worked very carefully, considerately. We worked in collaboration. Can your voice handle the fact that I want you to chase each other around a screen in a room? And they could, as long as they had moments where we could place the breath. There was very little that any of those artists couldn't do. And I think that it stretched them. It certainly stretched me as well in terms of my understanding of opera. But from a physical perspective, they were really embracing this freedom that they found in expressing themselves with their entire body and not just with their voices. So that was a beautiful adventure to go on, and they have risen to the challenge remarkably. I don't think anybody's ever seen them move the way they're moving at the moment.
Now, one of the things about opera as it's done now, by contrast to, say, 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago, there's a lot more physical effort going on. I mean, there's the production of La Traviata out there, which is available on video, in which Violetta basically sings one of her arias lying on a couch, which is not something that opera singers are usually asked to do. There are other productions where the singers are kneeling on the stage or doing all kinds of other things, as opposed to one of the great gods of opera, Luciano Pavarotti, who came onto the stage, planted his feet, sang his music, everybody applauded because it was wonderful, but he didn't act very much.
There you go. And I mean, I think this is also needing to change. I think that audiences want that involvement and want, but because what happens when the body is connected to the word is that the actor and the artists make sense and makes meaning of what they're actually saying. And very often with opera, they're singing, but are we really understanding that they're connecting to the words that they are singing? And some of the words, and most of the words that are penned for them, lyrically are so beautiful, and once the body and the soul are connecting with those words, it just takes it to the next level. So instead of, I mean, kneeling and lying is already considered a push, but yeah, these guys are moving a lot, and they're moving at diagonals, and they're lunging, and they're sitting and standing and running entrances and exits, and they're all so beautifully active on their feet, and it's so gorgeous to see.
We're going to take a quick ad break and a station ID. These are requirements. Otherwise, we get into serious trouble with ICASA, with the sponsors, and I get yelled at by the station directors. So this is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooks Spector, your host, my guest, second guest today, Sylvain Strike, the director of the new production of Rossini's The Barber of Seville at the Cape Town's Theater on the Bay. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
Discover the delightful symphony of flavors at Friends Bakery in Sandringham. Every Friday, indulge in fresh baked, flavored challahs like za'atar, homemade, and classic loaves, all perfect for Shabbat. Try the V Friends Bakery new pretzel challah. You'll be a fan for life. For a very limited time, enjoy free taster samples when you purchase your challah. Place your order easily via WhatsApp at 076-108-0085 and taste the difference that has everyone's taste buds buzzing. Visit Friends Bakery in Sandringham today and treat your taste buds to something extraordinary. And we're back. This is the Deep Dive, and I'm Brooks Spector, your host. My guest, second guest today, actually, we have a bountiful program, Sylvain Strike, who has directed The Barber of Seville, the Rossini opera. But it's at the theater on the Bay in Cape Town, and it's filled with all the physical theater tricks that she is known for. I want to ask you this about it. Did you know the opera beforehand, or did this come as something of a revelation to you once you took on the commission, or were you already a fan?
I certainly am not, traditionally an opera fan. I mean, I do love listening to it, but I don't follow it extensively and go out of my way to see opera. And I think it comes back to what I was saying before, is that I usually find, have usually found opera to be quite separate to the way that I work, but also that I didn't connect to it emotionally. A lot of the time, because the body wasn't quite connecting to the voice. So the Barber of Seville, I knew a lot of the music of it, and loved a lot of its music, but hadn't really kind of completely known the story until I was asked to come on board on this commission, and was delighted to see that it really is a comedy of errors, mistaken identities, wonderful disguises. It's a kind of whodunit, but in a comic way, which Figaro is the absolute maestro of, because he organizes everything that's going on stage and is completely in control. Of course, he charges a good fee for it. I mean, he's a wheeler and dealer, our Figaro, and a fantastic hustler who will do anything and matchmake if he needs to at any cost.
And if you see the second opera, which is actually the first opera, which was composed beforehand, you see him working in that fashion in the Mozart opera in The Marriage of
Yes.
Figaro. But you're not doing that one. You're doing the Rossini version of the earlier story composed later, which is already confusing to most opera fans, I guess.
It's become one of the most beloved and most performed comedic operas of all time. And the timelessness of his music and how popular it's become. I mean, it's been used in The Simpsons, for heaven's sake, and it's been used in a Bugs Bunny version. The Barber of Seville has become a world-renowned sound in our ears. And to think that he penned it, Rossini penned it at the tender age of 24. This eternally beloved music. So it's been fantastic to also explore the comedy within the music and how he must have imagined the comedy unfolding as he penned it, which is also why I wanted Rossini to be involved, because it's mischievous and delightful, and it takes one on a great ride of, the typical farcical elements of mistaken identity and who done it and who's going to put a spoke in whose wheel in order to get what we want.
You mentioned Bugs Bunny, and some people may not have caught that reference, but in the golden age of cartoons from the various cartoon houses in the US in the 40s and 50s, many people like me got our first taste of serious music and opera from Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig and Wile E. Coyote and the Road
Right.
Runner
Yeah.
and all the rest, as well as the animated film Fantasia, and it all seemed to be just wonderfully suited to that kind of music. And unfortunately, that's rather less used now, although you quite rightly mentioned that The Simpsons picked up on the Barber of Seville's music as well. I think most people probably can conjure up in their head. And I'm not even going to try to sing it, the Largo Al Factotum,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, best we don't try and sing.
no, I'm no singer. You don't want to hear me.
I certainly won't. But it's in my head the whole time. I mean, I cannot get the music out of my head. It's been a good 4.5 weeks now of hearing it. It's so delightful. But when it stays in the brain while we're working on it, it just takes over all the senses. I mean, what's so wonderful about Rossini's music, and particularly The Barber, is that it almost led the way for Chaplin's music, Buster Keaton's music, because of the comedic timing of it. I can't explain it. One recognizes a sense of what was later to be used in films that were done in silence, but to music. The particular timing of how it must have ex been extremely contemporary for his peers to hear him compose in this way. The music itself is funny, if that's even possible to imagine.
Well, I'm going to give you an assignment if you don't already know it. Rossini wrote some wonderful operas, but for many people, one of his most famous comedic touches is the Two Cats duet.
Well, I don't know it. Or
It's about
I've probably heard it, but I can't place it in my mind right now.
It's about 10 minutes long, and two singers. The only words they have to work with are meow and meow.
Oh, yes. I have heard it. I have. Yes. It's two female singers normally, isn't it?
Usually, sometimes there's a tenor singer in it, a baritone singer in it, sorry. And it really is very funny because here's this man who's composed these wonderful operas, and now what he's done is he's taken two house cats and made them the stars of a 10-minute fantasy.
Yeah, I know he had the most wonderful sense of humor, and it really persists. And when one exposes it again through physical comedy and physical movement, I mean, there's a sequence with a ladder, in this particular version of Barbara Seville. There's always a ladder in the story. They need a ladder to get down the balcony and elope together. But the ladder is used, as Buster Keaton would have used a ladder, and that's just joyous. And it goes to the music absolutely to a T.
What is next for you? I mean, obviously you're immersed in this, but your eye is looking at the future too, I'm sure. What is it you're going to be doing after this finishes besides a week's break?
Goodness, I'm actually going to be very honest and say I'm going to take more of a week's break. I have a daughter in matric, so I'm very much wanting to be present in this last stretch of her matric career. But I'm brewing processes and projects all the time, and there's exciting things on the horizon which I will divulge in time. But immediately it's going to be a break, and I continue teaching, of course. I'm extremely dedicated to teaching at the Lamta Academy.
You have all manner of stuff to do. We only have a couple of minutes left. Please, can you tell us the performances are when and what time and how to get tickets?
Great. So they're on the theatre. They're on at the Theatre on the Bay in Camps Bay. The tickets are through web tickets. They are from a Tuesday through to a Saturday, every night at 7 p.m., except Saturdays will be 6 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m.
And has any of it sold out yet? So sh we should warn people away from a day one and tell them, please, you got to show up at day two.
Brooks, to be honest, I don't know when this is airing, but it's selling out really fast. So it's really selling out fast. And I know that the 17th, which is our last performance, has completely sold out. But I'm quite sure if you make your way to web tickets, there will be a ticket or two.
I would encourage people to do it. Sylvain is a known quantity, as a known quality, shall we say, in terms of quality in her productions and her work. And I have a soft spot in my heart for what the Cape Town Opera is doing in all kinds of productions. And I really look forward to seeing this myself. We'll be there on the 13th, I think it is, our schedule says.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your support, Brooks. It's so lovely to see you and speak with you.
And we'll talk to you afterwards. We'll wave and say wonderful and and all the things you're supposed to say.
Oh, I hope you enjoy it. Just come ready for a laugh, because that it'll be.
With the way the world is, we definitely need a really good laugh for an evening. I look forward
I
to that.
think it will deliver on that. That's a promise.
We have been speaking with Sylvain Strike, actress, director, physical theater creator, Fortune Cookie Theater co-founder. We didn't even get a chance to talk about her time in the film District 9. I really wish I had done that, but perhaps we can do that at another time.
With pleasure. We'll talk about another time once films are going again.
And we will welcome you all back next week. This is the Deep Dive. Remember, if you hear it on Friday mornings at 9, you can also hear a repeat performance on Sunday at 10. So tell your friends, if you listen to this, tune in on Sunday and listen to this again. This is Brooke Spector, host of the Deep Dive at High FM. Have a good weekend, and we will talk with you again next week.